Hello everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Gaming in the Wild, a video games podcast about games from the artistic, creative side of the tracks, from indie to AAA. My name's John, I'm your host. I'm recording on a Friday night on the 29th of September 2023, out in Reykjavik, Iceland, as always. And speaking over this music is making me feel like some kind of like late night radio host. It's jazz time on a Friday night. But the music is from the game that I'm going to feature on the podcast this week. It is a full review of a game that I gave first impressions of last week, published by Devolver Digital. It is the much anticipated and quite well regarded indie game Gunbrella. So I have finished Gunbrella and I've got some more thoughts on it. I've got an in-depth review for you. It's a pretty interesting little game, actually. I guess the Gunbrella itself charmed a lot of people right off the bat, but there was more to this one than met the eye. There was more in it than I was expecting, and also less at the same time in some ways. So I'm looking forward to sharing my thoughts on Gunbrella with you later in the episode. But I thought I would start this episode by talking about a couple of new games that have been added to the podcast slate. And I know that a lot of listeners are going to be very pleased about one of them in particular, because a code finally came through for Baldur's Gate 3. I know that a lot of people are playing this over in the Discord and on Twitter at large. It has just gone absolutely nuts. I think no one expected Baldur's Gate 3 to be a hit like it has been, especially the developers. It's been quite amazing seeing what happened with that game. Although I guess I should caveat what I just said by saying congratulations to Dave Jackson, who had Baldur's Gate 3 in the Discord Fantasy Critic League and is cleaning up, as it is currently sitting at a mighty 96 on OpenCritic. So that's a lot of points for Dave. Well done, Dave, for picking that one out. So I'm going to give a few opening thoughts on Baldur's Gate 3 as well. I've played a few hours of that one. But as I am speaking, today is the release date of a game called Cocoon. You may well have heard of this one. It is by Geometric Interactive. It is published by Annapurna Interactive. It is an isometric or sort of top-down puzzle game made by one half of Playdead, who were responsible for Limbo and Inside. It looks great, and the Metacritic score for that one is 89, so the critics are lapping Cocoon up. They are saying it is ingenious, they are saying it is a joy to play, and they are loving the puzzles. I am downloading Cocoon as we speak onto my Xbox. If you have been curious about Cocoon and you have Game Pass, you're in luck. You can get Cocoon today. So I'm looking forward to playing that one. I'm also adding a game called Saltsea Chronicles to the slate. A code came through for that on Steam. That is by Daigut Fabrik. I don't think I'm pronouncing that right, but they are the developers that made Mutazione, a very, very cool, very stylish, and somewhat underrated, I would say, side-on adventure game in which you go to an island full of mutants and you grow plants and you try and untangle what is going on with the mutant community on this island. It's absolutely beautiful. If you have not played Mutazione, it's on all the consoles. It's also on Apple Arcade, I believe. So you can play it for free if you have that service. But their second game, Saltsea Chronicles, is coming out in a few weeks. It's another stylish adventure game with a very cool art style, great music. There was a demo of it that I played in the Steam Next Fest not long ago, so I'm really looking forward to playing Cocoon. I'm really looking forward to playing Saltsea Chronicles. Both of those have been added to the podcast slate, and I am currently playing Baldur's Gate 3. So this game has obviously been just tearing it up. People are adoring it. I've been dying to play it. I was holding out for a code, and I was also playing Starfield. So that ate up all my time. I thought, I don't have time for two huge monolithic games like that in my life at once. But having polished off Starfield, the timing couldn't have been better. Also in the fact that the latest patch allows you to play the game on a Mac, and it has minimum specs for a Mac, which is that you need an M1 Mac, at least, M1 or M2, and it needs to be a Pro. And I have a MacBook M1 Pro sitting here that I use for work. And so I've been playing the start of Baldur's Gate 3 on that computer, and I have to say, even on the recommended specs for a Mac, this game is running absolutely terribly. I'm on low specs at 1080p, and it is just about running it. Lots of frame loss, lots of jittering and stuff. So if you are thinking of playing it on a Mac, I have to say, if there's any other way for you to play it, if you are thinking of playing it on PlayStation, if you have a Windows machine, or you can wait for the Xbox version that we're told is forthcoming, I wouldn't say that Mac is the best place to play this game. But the game itself is very compelling straight from the off. If you are not aware of it, it's a Dungeons & Dragons style top-down RPG. RPG in the truest sense of the word. I think this game has as much choice and freedom as pretty much anything that I have played. I've been a little bit dizzied by the possibilities in this game. There is all sorts of stuff that you can do. The skills that you pick at the start when you are building your character will dictate all kinds of things. Like, you can select abilities that will allow you to talk to animals. You can select abilities that will allow you to commune with the dead and speak to them. And there are a lot of corpses lying around the landscape at the start of this game. The game begins when you're on an airship. You are being kept prisoner. It's like an alien Cthulhu-style airship run by these creatures called the Mind Flayers, these tentacle-faced sorcerers. And at the start of the game, they drop a tadpole, as it is called, into your eye. So you get this weird, creepy little alien bug that is infesting you. You meet a couple of other people at the start of the game when you are back down on ground level who have also had that treatment. And so there's a great sense of urgency in the story right off the bat. You have this very gripping beginning where your character is infected. You'll meet some of the other infected and band together with them. And that's how your party forms. It's one of those party-based games. We have a whole bunch of different characters that you can use interchangeably in combat, for example, and that will accompany you on your adventure, that you can talk to, that you can get to know. And they all have fantastic stories. So my character, I picked a Githyanki sorcerer. They're like these green-skinned, somewhat mystical beings. And you get quite a lot of party members right off the bat. In the first few hours, I already have 5 friends that I can put into my party. You're allowed a maximum of 3 companions at a time. So I've been having to pick and choose a little bit, and they are all so interesting. There's a dark elf called Asterion, who is kind of a trickster. There is a warrior called Will, who is a bit of a warlock and has some dark magic secrets in his past. A sorcerer named Gale, who has some rather pressing problems that you learn about quite quickly. Another Githyanki called Lezel, who is an amazing warrior and a bit of a hard case. And an elf called Shadowheart, who is quite an appealing character as well. So I've actually had problems picking who I want to spend time with, because some of the more characterful characters that I'm most interested in haven't proven too useful in combat. So I'm having to pick and choose a little bit, shuffle my party. But the game has made a great first impression. I will say that playing on a mouse and keyboard is a little alien feeling to me as a mostly console player. I haven't tried out a controller yet, so I'm trying to get to grips with the mouse and keyboard. But you hold down the command button on a keyboard to reveal all of the objects that are interactable in the environment. So I'm spending a lot of time with the command button held down. And you use the Q and E keys to rotate the camera. So I've actually accidentally quit the game a whole bunch of times by accident, because if you're holding down command to see the environmental cues and you try to rotate the camera at the same time, then you will quit Baldur's Gate 3. That's the shortcut for quitting an app on a Mac. I actually lost a bit of progress because of that, and I'm kicking myself. I'm learning to save more often. But the upshot of accidentally quitting the game and losing 20 minutes of progress was that I had to go through a whole bunch of encounters again. So I was meeting people, I was dice rolling with my deception, with my persuasion, with my perception, and I actually got really, really different results just from doing 3 or 4 dice rolls where people would or would not trust me. I had one party member leave because I failed a dice roll. So it's very, very interesting to me. This game has so many branching paths. Anything can happen at any time on any dice roll, which makes all of the choices feel incredibly consequential in a way that I've been impressed by and also a little freaked out by, I think. This game has made me realize that I'm used to a certain brand of narrative hand-holding in a game, where you know when you're doing well, and you know you've made the right choice, and you are usually allowed to see all of the story content in the game. And in this game, I feel like I'm constantly opening new doors, losing others, having doors slammed in my face where I just know that large strands of story are being closed off to me. So this is a bit of a mindset that I'm going to have to get into, but I'm very impressed by Baldur's Gate 3. Great opening thoughts for that one. I'm looking forward to tucking into it in detail across the next few months. And I will say especially because I have finally booked some vacation time. I'm going to go to the UK, which means I can pick up my ROG Ally, which is waiting for me, and I can play Baldur's Gate handheld, which I'm really looking forward to. So that is finally on the cards. There is one more game I wanted to talk about. As you will know, if you've been paying attention to games media, Cyberpunk 2077 is having a bit of a rebirth moment. CD Projekt Red have just released the 2.0 patch, as close to the final form as this game is going to get. Although I think, based on the experience I had trying this out, there's a little more work left to be done. So it was interesting to me that when the 2.0 patch came out, it does have a whole load of new additions. It has a redesigned skill tree, so you have to kind of re-roll or re-choose, re-spend all of your skill points when you start the game up. You have to redesign your character to fit with the new skill tree. There's also vehicle combat, new weapons, a lot of new stuff rolled into this update. But CD Projekt Red suggested that players should start a new save to enjoy the game to its maximum potential, which was an interesting thing to say. And I was just thinking that they thought people might have a good time if they went through the game again, because they've sanded off all the edges, they've taken out a lot of the bugs, they've fixed some broken quests, they have vehicle combat now, they have this new skill tree. And so I thought it was more of a suggestion. But having booted it up on PS5 and played an hour of it, I don't think it is a suggestion. I think it's a recommendation, and I think it's a recommendation for a reason. I did not have a good time with this version of Cyberpunk, and I know that that's swimming against the tide of opinion, but I loaded up my 95-hour save file, and the game did not do well. It was pretty much a catalogue of disaster, actually, and I'm on the record as a Cyberpunk 2077 fan. I love the game. I played through version 1.5 last year, and I do think it's one of the best open worlds that I've played. But if you are on a deep save file like mine, the game does not perform well at all. When my character first spawned in, half of the outfit, the hair that I wear, had all been forgotten. So they were kind of this half-dressed, bald, zombie-looking creature, looking very, very down on their luck, which I assume might be a bug with the transmog system. This is a system that allows you to wear your best armor with the best stats, but to reskin it to look like the things that you want to be seen in. So I had very powerful armor on, but I had skinned it with different leather jackets and clothing that I just liked the look of. And the game had forgotten half of it, but I thought, okay, that's fine. It's just a little glitch. I'm going to role play this. I'm going to say it's been a year since I played this game. V's fallen on hard times. Fine. But I ran into a whole load of other problems too. For example, when I respec'd my character, my carry weight went down by 20% somehow. So I was instantly encumbered in that very, very slow-walking Skyrim style. My main weapon is a smart shotgun, which is amazing. You fire 12 bullets at once, and they home in on the enemies like little guided missiles. And I'd lost the ability to use smart weapons, because that must be buried somewhere in the skill tree too. So a bit of a rough intro, but I then got a phone call from Victor Vector. If you've played the game, you'll remember him. He is a cyber doctor who implants your body and mind with all of the cyberware you're going to be using in the game. And Victor Vector had to say that there is a whole load of new cyberware available, new technology that's just landed in Night City. And he told me to go and visit any cyber doctor at all that I wanted to. And I thought I'd like Victor to do this work himself. So I drove to his particular surgery, and when I got there, he didn't seem to remember making the call. He didn't have any new dialogue. He had a dialogue relating to events of when I last picked the game up properly in the story a year ago, so that was really disappointing too. But then came the worst part of all. I came out of Victor Vector's surgery, and I was just standing in the street looking around, and I started noticing a lot of stuff going wrong with the game. All of the crosswalks were set to walk, but the traffic was not obeying the stop signs at all. So I saw a car plow through a pedestrian and kill them outright. I also saw some people walking into a parked car and then reacting as if it was like a T-Rex, screaming and running away. I found a burning car wreck floating above ground level in the street. And then a pedestrian walked by, set himself on fire on this floating car wreck, and then walked on as if nothing was happening. It was honestly quite surreal. It was like ant colony collapse in Night City, everything going wrong, just loaded with bugs, loaded with glitches, much more so than anything I saw in my last playthrough. So I captured a bit of video of that and I tweeted it out. You can see that on my Twitter account if you would like to. It's just 1 minute of everything that could possibly go wrong. And I had some interesting conversations as a result of that. For example, friend of the show, Brad Galloway from So Video Games podcast, said that he's playing it for the first time on a clean new save file, and he has found it to be almost flawless with one bug in the 20 hours or so that he has played. And a whole bunch of other people said similar stuff. So my working theory is that old save files don't do well with this new version, and that is perhaps why CD Projekt Red recommended a new save file on Cyberpunk 2077. I will finish by saying, if you've never played the game before, I would fully recommend you go and play it. And if you do have a deep save file and are far into the game or post-game like I am, I would like to hear if the game has worked well for you, if it's just a weird glitch that I'm suffering, or if other people that have old save files are having the same thing. And the irony of all of this is not lost on me. I played through version 1.5 and had a great time at a time when everyone thought the game was broken. I'm now playing version 2.0 and having a terrible time when everyone thinks the game is fixed. So I don't know what's going on with Cyberpunk 2077 right now, but do play it if you haven't played it before. It's a truly great game, and I'm hoping that it gets patched out. And maybe I will have to start a save file again to get to that Phantom Liberty content and have a good time with it, but we'll see. And just before we get to the Gunbrella review, I've got two pieces of podcast housekeeping. One is that I got some really nice feedback on re-reviewing Sayonara Wild Hearts last week, because back when the show first started, it was about 20 minutes long, and I was talking about, you know, 3, 4, 5 games in that time. So I was just doing very short summaries of games. But there were some such good games that I played in that time that now that the podcast format is more settled in long-form reviews, it's really fun to go back and rediscover some of those games and talk about them again in the new podcast style. So I think I'm going to do more of that. I think there's a few that I'd like to talk about more. What Became of Edith Finch, A Short Hike, games like that, games that I reviewed way back at the start of the podcast and spoke about for 5 minutes, are maybe going to get the treatment of a longer review now. So if you like that idea, if you're a regular listener, drop me a line, let me know what you think. Would you like to hear more re-reviews of older indie titles brought into the spotlight once more? You can reach out to me in loads of different places. I'm Gaming in the Wild on basically all social media. Or you can email the show. I never say that there is an email, but it is johnisgamingintheWild@gmail.com. So let me know if you have any thoughts or comments or feedback or games you'd like to hear me talk about again. And finally, I have one new patron to thank this week, so a big thank you to McGurkinburger. Thanks very much for becoming a patron. I really appreciate it. So shout out to you. McGurkinburger will get access to a whole bunch of bonus episodes, the show's private patron Discord, which is a really, really cool place to talk about games every day. It's a quiet corner of the internet with a whole bunch of interesting, kind and pleasant people talking about video games all day. And in this time where social media is kind of going up in flames around us, it's a really cozy, supportive, safe-feeling environment to just talk about games in peace. And the podcast community has been killing it lately. So thank you very much to all of the patrons of the show. And if you would like to join us, you can do so at patreon.com/gamingintheWild. There is a link in the description if you'd like to come join the community and show your support for the podcast. And with that said, let's move on to the featured game of this episode, Gunbrella. Now, Gunbrella is a game that came out earlier this year, just a few weeks ago actually. It is developed by Doinksoft, the makers of Gato Robato. It is published by the ever-reliable Devolver Digital, and it has a really nice soundtrack by Britt Brady and Hyperstep, with two Ps. It's really cool. It's like a mixture of lo-fi electronica with noirish jazz and western influences. There's a bit of acoustic guitar in there. It's quite a varied soundtrack and very, very atmospheric. The game is currently out for Switch and PC. I played it on Switch. It is a perfect Switch game. I love playing pixel art games on the Switch. It just feels so right. There were a couple moments of slowdown, but not that annoying kind where you get frame drops and hitches and strange sort of arrhythmia in the performance of the game. This game just actually slowed down in a smooth way and then sped up again when I went into the next screen, and only a handful of times, so it performs pretty well. How long to beat has this one at 5 hours to complete the story, 6.5 with side quests, and 11.5 for completionists. My playthrough came in at about around 6 hours. I didn't do every side quest, but I did most of them. Metacritic has this one at 80 on Switch, 82 on PC. The website Hey Poor Player gave it a 90 and said Gunbrella offers tight and thrilling action, a moving story of revenge, and a fascinating world well worth exploring. I'm not sure what more I could ask for from an action platformer. Rock, Paper, Shotgun were a little more measured. They said it's a short and intensely fun little shooter whose biggest fault is occasionally luring you into wanting it to be something more than it actually is. And I do think that's a fair thing to say, actually. It's quite a tightly scoped game. It's perfect to everything that it does. But I did have a slightly nagging feeling in some of the short, snappy levels that I just wished for a little more substance, I think. And the developers described this game by saying, "Uncover the dark secrets of a gritty, tangled metropolis and battle diabolic villains with your trusty Gunbrella, a bulletproof brolly that doubles as a firearm." Then I have to say about this one that it's a slick, snappy action platformer that plays like a dream, with a surprisingly affecting story and some welcome adventure game elements. It's heavy on style, but short in length, perhaps to a fault. So I thought I'd start by talking about the scenario with this game. It is a 2D pixel art side-scrolling action platformer, and at its heart, it's an old-fashioned revenge tale. In the same way as old cowboy movies or old samurai movies. And it has a kind of a Western noir feel to the whole thing. It begins when our nameless protagonist is out collecting mushrooms. We get a little intro sequence, and he notices in the distance that his home is on fire. So he rushes back to the scene, and he finds the results of a home invasion. His wife has been violently murdered and lies dead. His child has been taken, and the only clue is a weapon. It is the titular Gunbrella, which he picks up and he sets out on a mission. He pulls on a Mac, he puts on a little hat. He's a bespectacled, bearded little cluster of pixels with a lot of personality, actually. And he sets out on his mission. He's kind of broken at the start of the game. When we first see him, he's just this innocent-looking guy out foraging. But when we start playing as him, he's kind of a broken, gritty guy, or at least a good man who has been set on a dark path. He is grittily determined to find the owner of this weapon, to rescue his child, and to avenge his wife. And we see that several times when he starts to encounter suspicious people, when he starts to find out clues about the Gunbrella. He grits his teeth and he sweats and he looks traumatized, I guess. So it has this very gritty tone to the whole thing. The journey is spread across several distinct areas. It's broken up in a really cool way, I think. Each one is just a few screens, really. It's side-scrolls, but then occasionally you will travel from area to area. There are a handful of secrets to be found along the way, so you can do a little bit of exploring. There are some simple puzzles, like locked doors, switches, having to do a task for someone so that they will open a gate for you and let you forge on. So it's a very familiar game format. Along the way, you will go through several areas of wilderness. It's in quite a muted, brown, grey, dark kind of palette. It feels oppressive in a way. And after travelling through a wilderness, taking out some creatures, staying alive, finding some resources along the way, you will come to one of several villages. And this is the first time that the game surprised me, I think, because there are lots of NPCs to talk to, some of whom have side quests for you. All of the writing is really, really fun. The characters have a lot of personality. And this is where it took on a little bit of an adventure game vibe in a way that I really liked. It reminded me a little bit of the beginning of Hyperlight Drifter, when the Drifter wakes up in a strange village and has to piece together what's going on in this world. And it is a grim world where everything seems to be going wrong, society seems to be under threat and coming apart, and I was all in at this point. It's a really strong beginning for the game. And in the first village that you come to, a shabby little town called Orwell, you find your first clue. You start showing the Gunbrella to people, and some people seem to recognise it and to have some knowledge of the people that carry that kind of weapon. And so the mystery starts to open up in a really interesting way. You meet a couple of cool characters. There's a tourist there who is headed to Allendale, the nearby city. There is an old fisherman who seems to know more than he is letting on about the Gumbrella. There is a creepy medication store where you can buy Bill's pills from a nutty old guy. These are pills that will, over time, regenerate health for you. And you also meet the mayor. He tells you that the town is being terrorized by a cult who is stealing children. So there's a big clue right there. You have to go and investigate the cult. And I would say that from the off, it's a pretty interesting, compelling mystery. And I was very curious about where this story was taking me. You also find your first train station. You're not allowed to go and board a train to Allendale yet. You have to go and do a little quest to get a rail pass first. It's one of your first major quests. And it turns out that it's a neat way to segment the game as well. Every town that you come to will have a train station, so you can go back and forth between the settlements that you found to check on people, to do side quests, and sometimes to backtrack for story reasons as well. There are also benches where you can rest in the Hollow Knight style, although unlike Hollow Knight, this game does not have a map. And it's one of those games that's like a borderline case about whether it needs one. A bit like Death's Door, you might say. I did feel disoriented once or twice and a little bit lost. I had to look at a video walkthrough a couple of times because you do have a journal that tells you where your next mission is and what you're doing in case you need reminding. But sometimes I felt that it wasn't 100% clear where I should be going. So just to minimize pointless backtracking, I did use guides now and then, but it is quite a small play area. It is slightly hard to get disoriented as long as you know where you're going, and sometimes I didn't quite. But as you are wandering around the forests and sewers and cave systems and abandoned buildings between the towns and the wilderness areas, you get into a lot of combat, and this is where the Gunbrella comes into play. And I have to say, the Gunbrella is a great idea. It is very memeable, and I think it's why this game got a little bit of momentum after it was in the Nintendo Direct. And it could have been a gimmick that it's a game just about a gun that's also an umbrella, but it's actually not. And it's a pretty ingenious piece of game design, as it turns out. The Gunbrella is used for both movement and combat. When you are jumping during traversal, if you hit the R1 button, you will raise the Gunbrella and your character will shoot in the direction that you're holding. If you hold down R1, they will then float back down like Mary Poppins, basically. It's super intuitive, it's super enjoyable. And I love a Metroidvania-style game that doesn't hold back the abilities too much. And in Gunbrella, you do start with this amazing ability to vault yourself into the air in any direction. It plays a little bit like the dash from Celeste, in that you have to recharge it, so you can only use it once. But you also start with a wall cling, so you can hang onto a wall, or if your feet touch the ground, then you have another charge of the Gunbrella, so you can jump again. And it is pretty much like the world's best double jump, I would say. It made traversing even empty screens when you're walking back and forth from place to place. Even as I was just walking from left to right, I was constantly hopping into the air, shooting up with the Gunbrella, floating back down, doing the same thing again. So it made the moment-to-moment very, very fun. And I did think this game is going to get difficult. Something about Gunbrella made me expect a difficulty spike, whether it was in Celeste-style traversal platforming challenges or hard bosses like Hyperlight Drifter. It reminded me of both of those games quite a lot in different ways. And there is some Celeste light kind of platforming challenges. We have to fall between spikes, vault up into the air, wall cling, use the Gunbrella again to get over a boundary, take down enemies along the way, that kind of thing. But it never got too hard. It was always just a really enjoyable little tribute to Celeste in those moments. There is even a little bit of mountain climbing, and it was a section of the game that I really enjoyed. And you can also use the Gunbrella to catch onto zip lines and shoot across the screen. You can use it to hook onto hooks on conveyor belts to traverse you around the area. You really do fly around the screen feeling very mobile and free. It's very fast, fluid, very fun. I'm on the record as a big fan of fluid movement, and this game has it. I took to it like a duck to water, honestly, even after the very light tutorial. I felt like I'd been playing this game all my life. It was just a very intuitive experience. But the second use of the Gunbrella is, of course, in combat. So as well as using it to shoot around the screen, it's also a shotgun. With a short range and infinite ammo, you get close to enemies for the maximum damage. Enemies splatter and fly into pieces when you hit them up close. If you hit them from slightly more distance, they take a couple of hits. So there's a very aggressive forge ahead playstyle that is encouraged. You have to get close to get the most out of your shotgun weapon. There are a couple more ammo types that you will find along the way of the journey. There are rifle rounds that allow you to shoot at distance. There are holy rounds that you can use against certain enemies, and there are a few others that I won't spoil. I found these nice for variety, for sure. There were enough new mechanics introduced along the way to make it feel like there was always something new to do, and it stayed fresh as a result. As for the combat itself, it's fast and furious. You get very short bouts. Enemies are introduced well, so you get one encounter with a single enemy and you can learn their moves and see what they do, but then wrinkles are added through enemy placement, through adding environmental hazards. So maybe you're jumping and traversing and shooting all at the same time. Maybe there are four enemies of different types, so you have to bear all of their capabilities in mind. They come in different combinations. At those points, it has a little bit of Katana Zero energy. If you've played that game, you have to spot the enemies, decide what order to take them on in. But it's a bit more chaotic, I would say. It's not as precise as Katana Zero. Things will often unfold in unexpected ways, whether through explosions or through enemies coming at you and behaving unpredictably. It felt really good, and combat in this game will rarely go how you expect. I would say that the enemy types helped. It's not like a vast selection of enemy types, but it's enough to keep it interesting. In the wilderness, you will fight gorehounds, which are like scaly dogs that will charge you and ping around the screen. You will find beehives that spit out stinging bees until you destroy them. There are cultists, there are guards, there are mechanical enemies, defensive turrets, and flying cannons with a laser sight that trips when you interrupt the laser. You can also reflect bullets using the Gunbrella, which was a really nice twist on things. And there's some really good emergent feeling moments, like shooting into the air to blast away a flying cannon that then goes haywire, crashes down, and blows up on the ground, but it also blows up a fuel canister that then showers other enemies in fire. They run around screaming on fire, and you get to mop them up. Really good stuff. It felt like there was a healthy dose of chaos in the combat in this game. There are also a handful of boss encounters, whether human or animal or mechanical or demonic, all really fun. Never too hard, but they broke up the play. I would say, if anything, me as a below average skill level as a player, I found it extremely manageable. It never took more than 3 times to beat a boss, and a lot of them I beat on the first attempt. I did play on normal difficulty, and when you start the game, the cursor rests on hard. So I think the developer is trying to encourage you to play hard mode. So if you are a player who considers themselves to be skillful, who likes a challenge, maybe start on hard mode for this one. As for the other systems of the game, there are some resources. There is some upgrading to do. It's a small economy. It's not a very deep system, but it's enough to keep you interested. Things that you find from enemies like scales or feathers, you can sell. You can then use the money to buy health items like red apples that will give you one pip of overcharge in your health. There are bandages that will give you a full health restore. There is the aforementioned Bill's pill that will slowly replenish your health over time. There are also heart pieces, a little like in Zelda. If you find 2 of them, you'll get a permanent extra heart. There is a little bit of cooking. You can use meat that you find from animals, take it to a chef, and they'll make you food items that do various different things. And detritus collected from machine enemies can be used to upgrade the Gunbrella. But aside from this really slick gameplay and everything being in its right place, the thing that did take me by surprise the most was side quests. These are optional extras. So you might meet a character early in the game who is on their way to Allendale to do something. Later down the line, you might meet them again. And so you get wound up in all of these small stories that involve a bit of backtracking, a bit of optional extra stuff. And I really liked these. They were good little bits of extra story, little nuggets of world building, made the world feel alive, made the characters feel interesting. And you get some useful rewards at the end of those too. So I really enjoyed that little unexpected adventure game element. It did pad out the playtime, and it made the world feel deeper and like a really interesting place to explore. As it is a short game, I don't want to spoil too much, but I will say that the story really goes places in this game. I really felt for this character along the way and for their journey. People might say things accidentally sometimes, but because we know his background, there are moments where a piece of casual NPC dialogue will just hit a certain way. So it had some welcome moments of melancholy and surprising gravitas. All of the characters that I met along the way I really liked. There was a poet, merchant, innkeeper, the gunsmith, the fisherman, a scrapper and their gang of misfits, the family of hikers that you'll meet on your mountain climb, very, very wholesome. All very simple, all very distinctive. I think that the writing was really, really good in this game. They did a great job. I've been doing a little bit of writing as part of my work, and so writing just a few lines of dialogue and having a character feel like they have their own motivations and their own voice is something that I've realized just how hard it is. So I've got some newfound appreciation for this. And I think Gunbrella does a good job in that night in the woods kind of way of imbuing these characters with some spirit, really, I guess. There were several little sub-stories of people that you meet along the way, and you get to see them go through things. You get to see them finding the thing that they wanted or maybe not finding it. And I found myself really drawn into these small stories. I was expecting Gunbrella to just be a run-and-gun platform shooter, but I was really pleasantly surprised by the amount of thought and care that had been given to the characters and the story of this strange, dark little world. It is a really memorable place, and they did a great job with all of that side of Gunbrella. So to finish off by going through some of the high points and low points of this game, the high point for me, I think, is the movement in this game. It's a really satisfying platformer. The Gunbrella itself is a brilliant central idea, much better than I was expecting. Shooting up into the air and floating back down was satisfying every time, and it made every moment in the game fun. The combat was great. You pick it up in seconds. It never gets boring. There is a really good amount of chaos in there, and zipping around the screen, pulverizing enemies, never got old to me, especially when they explode so satisfyingly. The presentation of the game is good, graphically simple but flawless. It captures a careworn outback atmosphere. It's a dark and dusty, oppressive game world, and it really works. It feels forlorn, almost dreamlike, on the edge of reality. It has occult elements to the story that add some intrigue. The music is great, as you can hear. It's packed with atmosphere. The sound was good too. It has those little chuntering voices when you talk to people where they go "Ava Bavo" or something like that, just to start off a line. And the text animation bubbles are cool too. Words are animated for emphasis, so the letters might move around slightly in the speech bubbles, which was a touch that I really liked. The writing was good. It was always sparkling, never boring, always excited to meet new characters. And even in just a few lines, they managed to imbue them with character in a way that I really enjoyed. The game has a world that evolves throughout the game. Some of the decisions that you make will affect how people see you, only a couple of times, but there are moments where you can choose to do something or not do something that will affect how people perceive of you in this game world. The vibes in this game are also amazing. It's low-key, spooky, always gritty. melancholic and kind of gory and bloody in this classic Western revenge tale style, with a healthy dash of occult demonic shit in there as well for good measure. And a little bit of an environmentalist parable and some political dashes in there too. It was all stitched together very well, I thought. As for the downsides, I would say there was a couple of moments of aimlessness where the quest queue wasn't quite enough for me to grok where I was supposed to go. That was when I ended up looking at guides. I used a walkthrough a couple of times for that reason in such a short game. It felt a little unnecessary. I think I needed just a touch more direction at some mid-game moments, like being told to find a person, but then not being told where they are and having to intuit where in this world they might have gone. Was a step too far for me. Not a big hardship, and the moment-to-moment is fun if you're travelling around looking for someone, but I didn't want to retread too much old ground, even if picking up resources along the way and stuff. I just wanted to get on with it, if you know what I mean. A short spoiler-free note on the endings. I will say that there are two endings you can get. I got ending A, there is an ending B. I looked it up, and I was a little put out at how your ending is decided. It's like an early game, arbitrary seeming moment, not signposted. That annoyed me just a touch. But if you are a completionist or if you do feel unsatisfied with your ending, there is another one to go for. But my final criticism is the main one. It's a very short game. And I am an appreciator of brevity and not padding games. But sometimes it can feel a little bit like there's not quite enough meat on the bones of each area in this game. Some mechanics are literally only used once, like floating with the Gunbrella down between windy, spiked walls. Very satisfying in the moment, but you never see that again. And I felt like I was just breezing through levels. I sat down thinking that there was a lot more game to go, and I found myself breezing through levels that felt like they were maybe supposed to be harder, and actually just got through them very, very quickly and ended up leaving me feeling a little unsatisfied with some levels just because they were short. I would say it's like the opposite of Hollow Knight in a way. That's a game that Team Cherry just kept making more and more and more game, and they ended up with perhaps a few too many areas, I would say, ultimately. Gunbrella went the other way, so some entire areas in this game feel like the entry passage to a new Hollow Knight biome. I think it could have used with a little more of that kind of creative abandon. And while it is tightly scoped, and perhaps that's why it plays and feels so good, it does also feel like it could have done with a little more meat on the bones, a little more substance. But to round it off, I would say that if the worst thing you can say about a game is that you wanted more of it, that's a compliment in a way. It's a backhanded kind of compliment, sure, but for anyone who likes polished indie gems, if you like Katana Zero, if you like Hyperlight Drifter, if you like Celeste, if you like Hollow Knight, this is by far the shortest game on that list, and perhaps not at the big top tier table, if you know what I mean, but you will find something to enjoy in here, even if it is more of a snack than a meal. It's a good little game. That's Gunbrella. So that was Gunbrella. I hope you enjoyed that review. I had fun with that game. That was a really good little weekend game, a good little indie snack. I've been waiting for more of this kind of game this year, actually, like a nice little polished gem of an indie game, so it kind of scratched an itch for me. Nice to get another game chalked off as well after that 3-week period spent embroiled in Starfield. And there are so many more games that I have to cover now. I've never had a review slate this deep. I have Phantom Liberty, Chants of Sennar, The Cosmic Wheel Sisterhood, Moonstone Island, Mythforce, Engard, The Pale Beyond, Fall of Porcupine, and more still coming as well. So loads of games to look forward to. If you did enjoy the show, then please subscribe to the pod if you'd like to hear about those games in the future. Tell me what you're playing too. You can come and find me on social media at Gaming in the Wild. And if you would like to support this podcast, you can do so at Patreon. Come join the Discord, get the bonus episodes. It's patreon.com/gamingin the wild. Link in the description for that. As always, big thank you to all of the show's patrons. Thanks to McGurkinburger, the latest patron. You are welcome to join us. I'll be back next week with another episode, but take care of yourselves and each other, and bye-bye for now.